Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Drug addiction continues to be a problem in this country and other parts of the world. The amazing fact is that you may not know that you're living with an addiction problem and that the drugs in question may be in your own home. This is Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. Brad has been on the front lines of addiction and will share the wisdom he's discovered along with guest experts and those who have lived through it or are living through it right now. Here's your host, Bradley DeHaven.
Welcome to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven, and I'm here every Tuesday at noon with movers and shakers across the United States that are making a difference in this epidemic of drug abuse, prescription drug abuse, and all the sordid places that it leads our loved ones and a lot of times our children. So we try to put together the voices across America of people that are in different parts of our country so that we can better illustrate what is going on everywhere. It's not just in your backyard. It's not just in your community. It's not just in that bad part of town or that rich kid's school. It's everywhere. And so by interviewing people across the United States, we hope to bring education, cause awareness, and cause reform as well. And we're going to talk today with Judy Rumler. Judy runs the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation, and she's going to tell us about what they're doing at the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation and where they're located and what they're doing on a national basis. I'd like to welcome Judy.
Thank you, Brad.
Well, you know, let me first mention that if anybody needs to reach me, they can reach me at rxdrugaddict.com, and they can like us on Facebook at Afflicted by Addiction. Judy, you've been through the ringer. I'm going to ask you the question that I ask every one of my guests, and that is, are you afflicted by addiction?
My life has been changed forever by the disease of addiction. My son, Steve, was a victim of the current epidemic of prescription drug overdoses, and he died on July 1st, 2011, and my life will never be the same without my precious son. Steve was a very loving, caring person. He was a Dean's List student at the University of Minnesota. He had been an all-conference soccer player. He ran a marathon in a little over 3.5 hours. He was a gifted musician, a successful financial advisor. He had lots of friends and was well-loved. He was engaged. And as I think you alluded to earlier, this is an epidemic that just reaches anybody and everybody. Steve was injured in 1996 and sought answers to his pain from many places, many doctors and experts, but was finally prescribed, first of all, antidepressants and then benzodiazepines, Klonopin. But finally, in 2005, 9 years after his injury, he was prescribed OxyContin, opioids, by a very well-respected, well-intentioned family practice doctor here in Minneapolis, where we live. And he told us then, wow, this is great. This is the answer. It gets rid of my pain. After he had died, we found a note among his belongings that said, at first it was a lifeline. Now it is a noose around my neck. And he eventually, obviously, became addicted, and he knew he was in trouble when that happened.
Well, you know, you mentioned a couple things there that are really important, I think, for all parents to listen to. So often, and I'm sure in your work, you find that people say, oh, well, this won't happen to my kid. He plays soccer or on the football team, or she's a cheerleader, and or she plays for the volleyball team, or she's so active with her church, or, you know, all of these, you know, things that, you know, make us parents think everything's normal and fine and that addiction's not going to rear its ugly head in our life. But yet, with all I've just described, I've basically described your son, Steve, and addiction entered his life.
Well, absolutely. Addiction is a disease, and it's not a choice. People don't choose to become addicts or to become addicted. And when Steve was prescribed these medications, he had the tendency, obviously it's not in everyone, to become addicted, but he was one of the unfortunate ones that had the genetic makeup or something that allowed or that turned him into an addict. And you're right. My experience now has shown that it can happen to anyone, any place, and this is a very important issue to get out to the public so that people will be aware, when they see signs to try to offer help. But it's a very difficult issue.
And it also brings up an important point, too, because although your son was an adult at the time of his first prescription, my son was like 14, 15 years old when he got his first prescription for Vicodin with a broken arm. So one of the things that I know you do and I do is always tell parents to question that doctor and even to have dialogue with them about that drug and its addictive nature in front of the patient or your child.
Well, that's very important. And, of course, one of the problems we have today, I think, is that our doctors don't really know how to deal with this. First of all, they're only given 15 minutes or some minimal short period of time to address a very complicated, often issue with pain. And the answer that so many Americans are looking for when they go to the doctor is a pill, and that seems to be the easiest way to handle it for many doctors because they don't really know how to have that conversation or what to do. So we, as a foundation, have made a couple of grants to organizations that present CME courses on responsible opioid prescribing and are hoping to try to encourage the education of doctors. Unfortunately, it's not something that's taught in our medical schools. Most of the people who are teaching, most of the doctors in our medical schools are older doctors, and they aren't really that up-to-date on this epidemic. And there's a dilemma associated with this. People who have chronic pain and are apt to become addicts because of their tendency for addiction, it's a dilemma for the doctor and for the patient. The doctor really doesn't have very many easy answers, and the patient doesn't always understand the risks that are associated with taking opioids.
And you touch on a couple of important things. One is the limited amount of time that a doctor typically has with a patient to diagnose and treat, and that prescription pad unfortunately comes out pretty quick in a lot of cases. And the other is the training of doctors today is, I think it's 5 hours of addiction training in the entire time that they go through medical school that's mandated. And I think that, I know that you're doing a lot of things, and we'll get into that later in the show, but the ongoing training of our doctors that are out there in the world, when we've suddenly discovered that the very drugs that they're writing on a prescription pad are the ones addicting and killing our children and leading them to addictive street drugs like heroin, and more training needs to happen at that doctor level and more time needs to be spent with these patients. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, I agree. One thing that we've found that works is to, it's hard to change medical schools, although we would be interested in efforts along those lines, but we have a program where we are able to go in and speak to the residency programs and get to the new doctors that way. And what we've funded is access to for medical students and medical residents to get this training because we need our new young doctors to get the information that they're not getting in medical school. I wish there were a way that we could change the curriculums, but I haven't found a way yet.
Well, you know, I often tell parents that I'm talking to about education and awareness, and I think that you'll agree with this, that I tell them that they have a choice when learning about addiction, and that choice is they can learn about it now or they can learn about it when they're forced to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you and I both probably learned about it when we were forced to.
Absolutely. I knew so little. I did go to a lot of Al-Anon meetings, and I think one of the unique things for pain patients is that it's different for a pain patient. Someone who has legitimate pain, we were told, let go, let God, at our Al-Anon meetings, and I know that that can work, but in Steve's case, I feel as though we needed to do more than what we did.
Right.
I guess that's a mother's worry always, that they're, you're supposed to protect your child and keep them safe.
So I know that you talk with parents a lot, as I do. I probably talk to two or three parents or loved ones a day. Mm-hmm. And they utter those words, and they're just tearful words that my son or daughter is a heroin addict, or my son or daughter is smoking their medications, or whatever it may be. And they think that that's their deepest, darkest moment. And I try to convey to them that that potentially isn't their deepest, darkest moment. And that's why they need to throw the book at this and do everything that they think that they can do. But sometimes, just like addiction, no matter what you do, sometimes people become addicted. And no matter what you do in treatment, sometimes people die.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the success rate in treating opioid addiction is very low, especially with the standards that our health insurance plans have of 28 days of coverage. And Steve went to Hazelden, which is a renowned treatment facility here in Minnesota, and this is what they recommended, and what he did was 28 days. But obviously, in retrospect, it was not enough, and I think we're learning more about that. But we need to find ways to get better coverage and more access for patients.
You know, I've interviewed hundreds of addicts, and I must tell you that of the hundreds of addicts that I've interviewed, I've asked them that question of what kind of treatment they were through. And if they say they were in for 28 days or 30 days or whatever it may be, if they're in a 28-day program, I always cut that number in half and I say, what were you thinking on day 14?
Mm-hmm.
And typically they'll say to me where I was going to get drugs when I got out.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is, you know, hundreds of interviews later, I was always surprised that no matter what number I gave them into their treatment, that to me, I kind of termed it as a bit of a cake bake. If everybody had cancer walked into a doctor's office and the doctor said, everybody with cancer, go over in that corner, you're all going to get 28 days worth of treatment, we would be outraged as a community.
Absolutely.
So here we've got a delivery system for medical care that's covering 28 to 30 days as if everybody just walked in there with the same set of problems, the same addiction, the same mental luggage or whatever's going on, whatever goes thump in the night, all of the factors that are associated with addiction that we all know too well now, and they're being pigeonholed into 28 and 30-day treatments all too often, and their success rate is horrific.
It is horrific. Well, and also I think there's such a swing now to the opioid addiction, and I'm not trying to belittle alcohol addiction in any way, but I think there is a difference, and we're trying to put the same treatment on opioid addiction that we found to work a little bit with alcohol addiction.
Well, and I know you touch on the addiction or the treatment when it comes to 12-step programs. And that's one of the big things in interviewing all these addicts that I found out, too, that so many of these younger adults are not as apt to turn their life over to God and say that I'm powerless without God and to go that route and to truly believe that that's going to help them get away from this demon that has its hands around their neck.
Now, that definitely would be true of Steve. I know he tried that and tried, and he wanted to do it, but I think he just couldn't.
Well, and I think it goes back to something that we talked about before the interview, and I always tell people the best treatment is the one that works for you. So I think when I run into a young adult that has had a great relationship with God and was raised in church and really has something there that they can rekindle, that they're a great candidate for that type of treatment, and even it doesn't need to be that drastic a relationship, but if there's something there you can rekindle. But I think taking someone who's maybe agnostic or atheist or whatever they think they are or are, and trying to put them into a program that says, give up everything and let's give this over to God and he'll take care of it is really a long shot.
Well, I think, you know, for a long time that was really the only hope that addicts had, but today we have options for medication-assisted treatment that I think are important for everyone to be aware of so that it can be an important option in the treatment of opioid addiction.
That's one thing I want to talk about when we get back from the break is medication-assisted treatment and non-medicated treatment and maybe what some of the comparisons are and what you're hearing. Judy Rumler is our guest today, and she runs the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation, which is a tribute to her son, Steve, who passed away on July 1st of 2011 of a drug overdose after a battle with an injury. An athlete, a star student, everything that you would think you want your child to be, and addiction grabbed him like it does so many young people. I'm Bradley DeHaven. You're listening to Afflicted by Addiction, and we'll be right back after the break.
News. Opinion.
Hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Bradley DeHaven has spoken to thousands of parents and addicts, discovering commonalities and teachable moments that can spare you the consequences of addiction. The signs, symptoms, and solutions of drug addiction is something you can learn now, or when you are forced to. Bradley has written two books on drug addiction from the view of a parent. His no BS approach could save your child's life. Brad has been interviewed on Fox, ABC, CBS, The Huffington Post, and other forms of media. Brad and his son appear in the award-winning documentary Behind the Orange Curtain. Brad's available as a keynote speaker for events and corporations. Learning about addiction is important for every family. All the rules have changed, and now the drugs that addict our children are synthetic heroin, prescribed by your doctor and found in your own medicine cabinet. Sign up for Brad's newsletter on rxdrugaddict.com and find links to his two books, Defining Moments and The Addict Among Us. Again, be sure to visit rxdrugaddict.com for more information.
Prescription drug and heroin use are epidemic in America. Every 19 minutes, someone dies from a drug overdose. Every 24 minutes, someone dies from a prescription drug overdose. Where do these drugs come from? Your own medicine cabinet, the middle school playground, friends, and the biggest problem of all, dirty doctors. Behind the Orange Curtain is a hard-hitting documentary that will open your eyes and your heart to this very real epidemic facing our youth today. Prescription drugs and heroin use. Addiction crosses all socio and economic barriers. It doesn't matter if you live on Park Avenue or the park bench. No one is exempt. It's in your city, your county, your state, and in your backyard. Behind the Orange Curtain is coming to iTunes April 23rd. Check out Behind the Orange Curtain on Facebook and visit our website at www.behindtheorangecurtain.net.
Hi, I'm Bradley DeHaven, and I'm the host of Afflicted by Addiction. The best rehab is the one that works for you. And this show has been made possible by the generous contribution of the rehab center that my son went to, Narcanon. I'm blessed that my son is 2.5 years clean of the drugs that once owned him. Narcanon gave him the tools that he needed to walk through a world filled with drugs and not return to the darkness of addiction. Narcanon did not want to run a commercial during this program, but I want to thank them for allowing the voice of those of you who are afflicted by addiction to be heard. Visit my website, rxdrugaddict.com, to get a link to Narcanon. And if you want to learn more, just click on the site. Again, the best rehab is the one that works for you. Most importantly, seek professional help if you are afflicted by addiction.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. If you have a question or comment for Brad about the program, please send an email to brad@rxdrugaddict.com. That's brad@rxdrugaddict.com. Now back to our program, Afflicted by Addiction.
Welcome back to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven, and you can reach me at rxdrugaddict.com. I'm the author of two books, Defining Moments, which chronicles my journey into my son's addiction, where I went undercover to get my son out of a prison stint and get him to rehab for the disease of addiction. I just felt like too many people are thrown in prison that have a disease, and I wasn't going to let my son be another one. My second book, The Addict Among Us, is a self-help book, which is other people's story. It's how to prevent, detect, treat, and live with the addict among us. You can like us on Facebook at Afflicted by Addiction, and today on Afflicted by Addiction, we are joined by Judy Rumler, who so many people in this community of activists who have sprung forward from their own tragic loss in so many cases, or their near-tragic loss. In my case, I'm blessed that my son is still with us. It's one of those things where a parent never thinks. Here's Judy Rumler, who was a financial planner. Her son's a financial planner, and oddly, I never mentioned this to Judy, but I'm a financial planner. And so here, apparently, financial planners have addicted children. So, you know, if we can make light of anything here. But Judy, welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, Judy, you've done so much, and as I alluded to, so many people just keep, your name keeps popping up with me, and I know you're doing some great things, and we're going to talk later in the show about a rally that's happening in D.C., so I hope everybody will stay tuned and listen for that. But I'd like to ask you, when you formed the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation, why do you think it's unique? There's so many organizations out there. Tell me the uniqueness, because I know it's unique, and I want you to share that with our audience.
Well, when Steve died, we knew we wanted to make people aware of this problem, but we had no idea that it was an epidemic, that he was part of an epidemic of overdose deaths and addiction. And we wanted to make a difference, so we knew that he had this pain that was sort of at the core of his problem, and we researched. I have a sister, Betsy, and who lives in Virginia, who's a very good researcher, and I had her go on the web and try to find other organizations that were focusing on helping pain patients with this issue. And so many of the organizations out there that are supposedly in support of pain patients are organizations that are advocating for more access to medications for their pain, for their patients. And we are looking at it in a different way, in the unique way of trying to help pain patients avoid this trap of addiction. So, and we realize it is a big problem and a dilemma for anyone who's suffering with chronic pain, and I assume that there are legitimate reasons to prescribe opioids, but there are also being prescribed for pain when they shouldn't be, and so we're advocating for alternative and complementary ways to treat pain. We're advocating for doctors to have more understanding of pain management. So we're coming at it. There are a lot of organizations out there, a lot of wonderful organizations that are working on the addiction issue, but we're really coming at it from trying to help people who are suffering with chronic pain, and we understand that there are no real easy answers and that there are times when they are going to need to have the opioids.
Well, you know, I recently had a friend who had a pain issue, an accident, and needing pain, and he knows me really well. And because of that, he said to his doctor, "I don't want any narcotic pain pills. I have this friend, he's, you know, talks about this stuff, and I've heard him speak, and I just want to avoid any narcotic pain pills." And to his surprise, everything that they could offer him as an alternative wasn't covered by his insurance.
Yeah.
Do you run into that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I had a meeting yesterday morning with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, and was talking about this issue, that we need statistical data that will show that the use of acupuncture and other alternative ways of treating pain are effective, and then perhaps the insurance companies will be more apt to cover this. And it's a very important issue, but a very complicated one too, to try to figure out how to get this part of the mainstream treatment of patients, is to include all of this. And we believe in integrative medicine. There should be someone in charge of each patient who will consider all the options, including these complementary so-called ways of treating pain. But that's one of the problems. And plus, it takes more time for the doctors to figure all of that out than to just write a script. And the doctors aren't educated about it. But insurance is definitely an issue.
Well, insurance is an issue, and I think also the fact that you allude to the education of doctors, so much of that education actually comes from the companies that make the medicine that they're prescribing.
Well, that's absolutely true, and, you know, this is, I think I mentioned to you something that has been dubbed the conspiracy theory, that all of the top-selling pharmaceuticals in this country are medications that are used on a daily basis for chronic diseases and chronic conditions. I'm referring to like Lipitor for, cholesterol and blood pressure medications and diabetes medications. And these
right.
are the lucrative medications. And so when the drug companies came up with these opioids, I think they more or less invented this disease of chronic pain in order to find ways to have it treated as a chronic condition and put people on chronic opioid therapy for their chronic non-cancer pain. And this has led to a real, real problem with addiction and overdose deaths. So go ahead.
I was going to say, all of the diseases that you mentioned, with exception of chronic pain, are diagnosable by a test, where chronic pain is not. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's, I think, a lot of, or that, as you called it, a conspiracy theory, but I think it's a great theory, that this is something, and even, I don't know if you heard my interview with Brian, who was a former drug dealer who came on the show, but he said that the kids that are out there getting drugs know that the drugs that they go try to get from their doctors and get their parents to go take them in for are drugs for treatment for conditions that can't be diagnosed with a test, like ADD or psychological problems or sleep disorders or pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can go in and get mom and dad to take them up there and get those pills. And oftentimes parents don't really see the head fake, because in my interview with Brian, he would tell stories about people that one kid could only get his parents to prescribe him Adderall. So he'd go get 90 Adderall at a time, and he would trade those for the drugs that he really wanted, or sell them for money so that he could get those drugs.
Wow. Yeah,
so often these drugs that are for conditions that you mentioned are really not something that you take a test and it comes back in your blood work of, hey, you've got diabetes, or hey, you've got high cholesterol, or whatever the case may be. This, in this case, the patient has to say, my pain level is 10 or 9 or 6 or whatever they say, and the higher they give that number, or I haven't slept in a week, so they can get that that Ambien or those benzos that they unfortunately abuse so much. But it's really a slippery slope, don't you agree?
Well, absolutely. And the pain level test, which was put into effect by the Joint Commission, that there was the influence of the pharmaceutical companies there as well. And so doctors give this test, or are required to ask patients about their pain level, and then they also feel pressure to treat if they can get in trouble for not treating pain. Is the way that this has come down from the Joint Commission, and I think that's unfortunate, because there are many times when a doctor should say no, and I think more and more of them are learning that they should say no, and that's the better answer, instead of trying to find a way to treat this pain level of 4 when a patient appears.
You're absolutely right. You know, I talk to doctors all the time, and so many of them say that they sit in fear of not prescribing and getting sued. Mm-hmm. I even talked to a dentist that ran into that problem and said, I've got patients threatening to sue me if I don't give them pain pills because I extracted their tooth, and they're saying they're in level 9 pain. And she said that I think that they're abusing these drugs, but at some point, really, it's kind of like I hate to use this term, but it's like criminals have more rights than those that the crime is preyed upon them, and sometimes the patient has more rights than the doctor to force the doctor to write a prescription that they truly have since learned that they really don't want to write.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think that's absolutely true, and it's very unfortunate that doctors feel pressure to do that. And I don't know what the answer to that is, but I cornered someone at an airport the other day who had a Joint Commission briefcase and tried to approach her and find out why, you know, what they could do to change some of these things. Using the pain scale as the fifth vital sign.
Tell me, Judy, what with the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation, what are you doing with doctors for education or this? I mean, I know that you're doing some work with doctors specifically. Can you share that with us?
Well, one of the things we realized early on was that we needed to have the advice of medical professionals in order to determine what our programs should be and how we can best help and fulfill our mission. So we have created a medical advisory committee with some of the top pain and addiction doctors. We've got 3 outstanding pain doctors on our committee and 3 outstanding addiction doctors. One of the pain doctors is Jane Ballantyne, who was recently reported in Barry Meyer's book, A World of Hurt, which I would recommend to anyone who is interested in this
epidemic. Absolutely. Great book.
And the book begins with her story as a physician who was taken in by this compelling story about how we need to take care of pain patients, and was liberally prescribing opioids, and then was one of the very early ones to start to see that this was not good advice and good practice, and started to speak out against chronic opioid therapy for pain, and for a long time she was sort of blackballed, and now she's obviously a very highly respected woman in many ways, and also because she was one of the first to start ringing the bell on this. We also have a doctor from the Mayo Clinic, Dr. Michael Hooten, who was at the pain rehabilitation program that our son Steve attended prior to his time at Hazelden. And so, and then we have Dr. Kolodny, who is with Physicians for Responsible Opioid Prescribing. He's been a wonderful addition to our committee, and we work closely with him. And we have Dr. Sepala, who is at Hazelden. He's the chief medical officer there. And then we have a physician from the University of Minnesota and another doctor from Hennepin County Medical Center, all of whom are very knowledgeable about this issue. And they've helped us to develop our programs and to learn really what needs to be done, and we're trying our best.
Well, I think that makes you unique right there. When you look at so many of the foundations and all for great purposes, all what I find so interesting about so many of these grassroots organizations that have sprung up, sometimes they'll spring up with the thought in mind of what happened to their child, and they'll really branch out from there. And you've certainly branched out by including so many renowned doctors. You mentioned Dr. Kolodny. I interviewed him on my show a couple of weeks back. I met him originally in Washington, D.C. at an FDA hearing. He is a wealth of knowledge and truly an advocate for putting this thing on the table, this epidemic on the table, and calling it what it is and working on a solution, which we need these doctors to work on that solution. Everybody has to come to the table. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And we, as a foundation, have to answer the question, well, what do you know about this? You're not a doctor. And so we have access to resources and believe that we can come up with some good information from these wonderful people who are supporting us. And Dr. Kolodny is the one who called me a month or so ago, maybe less, and asked me if I would chair this rally in Washington that we will talk about. And he's really the force behind getting so many of our organizations together to try to make a difference. And we are. We're saving lives, and we want to stop and end this epidemic. So,
well, you absolutely are saving lives, and so many across the nation are. And you're so right about, you know, seeking out the alternatives and getting that information out there, because unfortunately so many people who see our cause see it as somebody or a group that's coming after the prescriptions in their medicine cabinet and doesn't want them to have the pills that they truly need if they truly need them. But I think you would agree that that's really not what any of these organizations are about, but we are certainly painted with that brush.
Well, I think that's true. And you know, I've been to the FDA a few times to talk to them at their hearings on these issues, and there are always a lot of pain patients there, and I really feel compassion for these pain patients, and I have tried to talk to them and explain that we really are advocating for pain patients, but we're advocating to try to prevent the addiction that is so often the result of the treatment that they're getting. So
absolutely. And when you see, and I've been to those hearings, when you see those people come up and testify, in a lot of cases, you almost feel sorry for the physical condition that they're in. And I'm not just talking about their pain. I'm talking about that some of them can barely speak when they get up there because they're so drugged.
Exactly. And yet I don't think they understand that. I know our son, Steve, would not have understood that at all, that he was a changed person as a result of these pills. He lost his zest for life and his enthusiasm and the sparkle in his eye. And yet he would have said that the pills were the answer because he was addicted and his brain had been hijacked and he had this disease. He didn't want to have it. He wanted to get well. He wanted to get better. But he was sick.
Right. And he had his whole life in front of him. And I know that at the time he was engaged. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Lexi, his fiance, is vice president with our foundation, and she's been a wonderful advocate for this cause as well.
That's fantastic. And I know that, you know, that fateful evening on or day of July 1st, 2011, Judy, your husband, Bill, life was forever changed, and you can't put that genie back in the bottle.
No.
But you can certainly save others from walking in your steps, and that's what so many people like you do, that I am so humbled by your efforts and the efforts that you put forward. And I think if people really looked deep at the amount of time that you spend doing this and doing it for no particular gain of your own.
Well, my husband Bill would say I'm at this 24/7. It's not quite that bad, but it's very time consuming. But it also is healing for me, and it's rewarding to know that I'm helping people. And you know, the statistics show that one person every 16 minutes in this country is dying of a prescription drug overdose. But then when you think about all of the families and all of the other people who are affected, it's not just those people who die. It's a whole huge group of friends and family that are impacted every single time.
Yep, it's the landmine that a family steps, or that the addict steps on, and the shrapnel hits the family in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
And I know that you've been a victim of that. Yeah, we're joined by Judy Rumler. Judy and her husband Bill were forever afflicted by addiction when their son Steve passed away of a drug overdose on 7-1 of 2011. And after the break, we're going to come back, and Judy runs the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation, and we're going to talk a little bit about a rally that's coming up in Washington, D.C. that we hope that all of our listeners will help spread the word so that we can get a presence out there and hopefully get a voice to Washington, D.C. and let them know that we've had enough of these deaths. We've had enough addiction, and we need education, awareness, and we need reform of a broken system. And so after the break, we're going to talk about that event in D.C. that's coming up, and you're listening to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven, and you can visit us on rxdrugaddict.com. We'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hi, I'm Bradley DeHaven, and I'm the host of Afflicted by Addiction. The best rehab is the one that works for you. And this show has been made possible by the generous contribution of the rehab center that my son went to, Narcanon. I'm blessed that my son is 2.5 years clean of the drugs that once owned him. Narcanon gave him the tools that he needed to walk through a world filled with drugs and not return to the darkness of addiction. Narcanon did not want to run a commercial during this program, but I want to thank them for allowing the voice of those of you who are afflicted by addiction to be heard. Visit my website, rxdrugaddict.com, to get a link to Narcanon. And if you want to learn more, just click on the site. Again, the best rehab is the one that works for you. Most importantly, seek professional help if you are afflicted by addiction.
Prescription drug and heroin use are epidemic in America. Every 19 minutes, someone dies from a drug overdose. Every 24 minutes, someone dies from a prescription drug overdose. Where do these drugs come from? Your own medicine cabinet, the middle school playground, friends, and the biggest problem of all, dirty doctors. Behind the Orange Curtain is a hard-hitting documentary that will open your eyes and your heart to this very real epidemic facing our youth today. Prescription drugs and heroin use. Addiction crosses all socio and economic barriers. It doesn't matter if you live on Park Avenue or the park bench, no one is exempt. It's in your city, your county, your state, and in your backyard. Behind the Orange Curtain is coming to iTunes April 23rd. Check out Behind the Orange Curtain on Facebook and visit our website at www.behindtheorangecurtain.net.
Bradley DeHaven has spoken to thousands of parents and addicts, discovering commonalities and teachable moments that can spare you the consequences of addiction. The signs, symptoms, and solutions of drug addiction is something you can learn now or when you are forced to. Bradley has written 2 books on drug addiction from the view of a parent. His no BS approach could save your child's life. Brad has been interviewed on Fox, ABC, CBS, The Huffington Post, and other forms of media. Brad and his son appear in the award-winning documentary Behind the Orange Curtain. Brad's available as a keynote speaker for events and corporations. Learning about addiction is important for every family. All the rules have changed, and now the drugs that addict our children are synthetic heroin, prescribed by your doctor and found in your own medicine cabinet. Sign up for Brad's newsletter on rxdrugaddict.com and find links to his 2 books, Defining Moments and The Addict Among Us. Again, be sure to visit rxdrugaddict.com for more information.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned in to Afflicted by Addiction with your host, Bradley DeHaven. If you have a question or comment for Brad about the program, please send an email to brad@rxdrugaddict.com. That's brad@rxdrugaddict.com. Now back to our program, Afflicted by Addiction.
Welcome back to Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven. You can find us at my website, rxdrugaddict.com. And I hope that you'll do that. And if you have somebody that you think would make a compelling guest for the show, please email me, brad@rxdrugaddict.com, or just visit me on the site on the Contact Me. We're joined today by Judy Rumler. Judy runs, and her husband Bill, run the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation in honor of their son Steve. There's a big rally coming up, Judy, in Washington, D.C., and I want to use this final segment to really drive home any information that you can help share for people. So I'll shut up and let you talk for a little bit. Tell us about this rally. I know I plan on attending and being a part of this rally, and I hope that that you can tell us more about it.
Well, we're really excited about this. We have a great committee. Dr. Kolodny, as I mentioned in the last segment, of Physicians for Responsible Opioid Prescribing, had called and asked me if I would serve as chair. I was very honored to be asked, and I have agreed to do that. We have a wonderful coalition of organizations, ARPO, Advocates for the Reform of Prescription Opioids. That's Pete Jackson's organization. And then Learn to Cope, which is a Massachusetts organization headed by Joanne Peterson. Operation Unite, Rally to Recovery, the National Coalition Against Prescription Drug Abuse. That's April Rivera's organization. And then Dr. Kolodny's Physicians for Responsible Opioid Prescribing, Avi Israel's Save the Michaels of the World, and Sherry Rubin's organization, the Hope Together Foundation. And we're sure we're going to have more sponsors, but this is the core group that's put this together, and we've spent a lot of time already trying to determine a name, and we've come up with Fed Up. We are fed up with the federal inaction on this issue, and we are calling ourselves the Fed Up Rally, and it's a rally for a federal response to the opioid epidemic. It's a call for immediate, coordinated, and comprehensive federal action to end the epidemic of opioid addiction and overdose deaths. We are going to rally, get together on Capitol Hill at Upper Senate Park, and it's on October 1st of this year, and it'll be from noon until 2. So we're doing this because urgent action from our federal agency is needed to prevent new cases of opioid addiction, to prevent more overdose deaths, and to ensure access to effective treatment for millions who have become addicted. So we feel this is a very, very important event for anyone concerned with this issue, either directly or peripherally, to be there and be seen and be heard. And we are going to have some great speakers. We haven't finalized that list yet of speakers. We are just now starting of the registration process, and anyone who wants to register, which I hope is everyone who's listening, can go to Fed Up Rally. That's FEDUPRALLY.eventbrite.com. FedUpRally.eventbrite.com, and you can register and get some more information. There'll be more and more information posted on that web page. At this point, it's just the basic information because we're still in some of the planning stages. But we're hoping to give people information on transportations and options and where to stay. And we're probably going to have T-shirts for sale. So it's we want to have an impact, and we want to get change, and we want to save lives. And we feel that the only way to stop this epidemic is through more federal action.
I think you're absolutely right. And so many of the people that you briefly mentioned that are already involved in this have already been, or in a couple of cases, slated to be guests on Afflicted by Addiction. So I'm glad that I'm apparently barking up the right tree with the movers and the shakers that are making a difference across the United States. April Rivera is a great example. Avi Israel, incredible. Everybody you mentioned is just put their heart and soul and bankroll into this. And it's something that a lot of people don't realize how much some of us do and how much some of us spend time, energy, money, so that we can help others not walk in our shoes. And even though my son survived, I've lost a couple of family members as recently as a year ago to addiction overdoses, and it just changes lives forever. And I'm so glad that we're going to finally get fed up enough to go to D.C. and do this rally. So tell us more about what do you kind of expect the logistics to look like? It's going to go from noon to 2. There's going to be some speakers. Is it going to be held outdoors or indoors? Or
It's going to be outside at Upper Senate Park, which is right next to the Capitol.
Right.
And we're hoping to have some congressmen and senators involved. There are a number of people in the Senate and in the House who are very active on this issue, Senator Manchin from West Virginia in particular, and Congressman Hal Rogers from Kentucky, whose constituents have been most deeply affected by this epidemic in Appalachia.
Absolutely.
That's where it started. And so, we've been talking to them about this, and we're hoping to have other, and maybe some celebrities too. We haven't identified any yet, but we're in particular yet, I should say. But we're hoping to have some celebrities who've been affected by this, and also, as I said, the people in the Senate and in the House, and also other advocates who will be speaking. And I'm sure we'll have signs and banners and T-shirts, and I'm hoping it'll be a nice day. We scheduled it for noon to 2 so that people who are on their noon hour in the area could stop by. The logistics are going to be a little bit complicated, but we've been working with someone in D.C. who's been familiar with putting on rallies to make sure we've got the right staging and the right audiovisual equipment and all of that.
And the right permits.
And the right permits. That we have already. We have our permit. We're all permitted.
Oh, good. Well, I'm going to definitely put a link to fedUpRally.eventbrite.com. Did I get that correct?
That's correct.
And I'll put it up on rxdrugaddict.com as well so people can link through there. And I would encourage anybody with an activist site to do the same thing. And the more the merrier, because we really need to show them that we're serious about this and get together and stop this madness, stop this devastation of families and the loss associated with addiction and, unfortunately, death that all too often follows.
Well, right. I know many people have seen the graph that shows how over the last 10 years, the number of prescriptions that have been written has quadrupled, and right along parallel to that line on the graph is the number of deaths.
Right.
So we can see that there's a correlation, and we just need to stop the prescribing and stop the dying. And it leads in many cases to heroin, and people need to understand that heroin and these painkillers are very, very similar chemically. So it's very simple and less expensive for people who become addicted to prescription drugs to move on to heroin.
Well, and I think that people need to understand, too, that along with that line of overprescribing and that line of death that's going up, there's a lot of other lines in between there, and those lines are babies born addicted to opiate addiction, people admissions to emergency rooms, you know, admissions to rehab centers, people that are addicted and in treatment, people that are homeless and on the streets because of their addiction or living a life that, I mean, I know a beautiful young lady that literally was a model. And I mean, one of the prettiest young ladies, she dated a friend of my son's, and she's now homeless on the streets, has no teeth, and she's in her mid-20s.
Oh, so sad.
And this is the kind of thing that drugs do to people and what it does to our society and the overall impact and cost against the society of an epidemic like this. And yet Big Pharma doesn't mitigate any of this expense. Doesn't that outrage you a little bit?
Absolutely. It's very tempting to take some money from Big Pharma for something like this, but then they would have some control over what we do. So our foundation and this rally also feel very strongly that we will not take money from pharma just because we want to remain totally independent and non-conflicted.
Well, I think when you look at what Big Pharma does to thwart reform efforts all across the United States, it doesn't take me a second to not just to talk with them, but at some point I just say, you don't care. You know,
mm-hmm.
you're putting your money where your mouth is, and your money's going in the hands of lobbyists that are going out there and trying to get, you know, senators and congressmen and congresswomen to vote against reform acts that will cause or hurt the sales of your product.
And another thing that people don't realize is that the FDA gets a big chunk of their money from fees that come directly from Big Pharma. So I think that's one of the reasons that those of us who've been trying to get changes made at the FDA have been unsuccessful in many cases. I mean, there are a lot of things that need to be changed, and it's not happening. So we're going to rally, and we're going to make people aware, and we're going to try to get some changes.
You know, when I tell people, speaking of the FDA, that the FDA, actually members of the FDA panel take honorariums from Big Pharma and take money and then are turn around and vote or put together doctors' panels that vote on different laws or drugs, they say, no way, that's, that couldn't be legal. But it is.
It is legal. I mean, they have to disclose it, but when you go to those hearings and you see the disclosures of a lot of the people who are on the advisory committees, you can see that they have connections to the pharmaceutical industry over and over again. The argument the other way, of course, is that, well, they have the knowledge, then they understand it, but no, it's very conflicted.
Well, it is, and the foot-dragging once they do have a vote. I know you've been to FDA hearings, I've been to FDA hearings, and when you see them vote down a drug, and, you know, I don't know, by 90%, but yet a year goes on that they don't make a final action on it. Or when they decide to vote to make hydrocodone, for instance, a Schedule II drug, they don't act on it, even though they had an overwhelming majority of the doctors on the panel that they put together, not the FDA doctors, but the panel that they put together that said, yeah, we want to move it to a Schedule II, but then nothing happens.
That's very, very disappointing. I was at that hearing as well, and our son Steve, when he got out of treatment at Hazelden, the doctor had been prescribing for him had fortunately lost the most recent doctor he'd gone to, lost his or surrendered his license to practice because he was being investigated for overprescribing. So Steve didn't have a doctor to go to, but he was able to go to the pharmacy because the doctor had been able to write refills for his Norco, which is a hydrocodone combination product. So he was able to get 2 months' worth of pills right there waiting for him at the pharmacy, whereas if that had been, you know, reclassified appropriately, he would have had to go to a doctor. So that's an issue that's near and dear to me.
Well, it is, and when I interviewed the young man who was an admitted, you know, former addict and drug dealer, he said exactly that, and if they did limit it to 30-day supplies, or if they had a tracking system that was in place across our plains and, you know, from coast to coast and north to south, that it would dry up the supply of these drugs that are resold, and at some point it would have an effect. He said immediately people would turn to heroin because they couldn't get it, but they're already turning to heroin because it's cheaper. But if you, I even asked him to picture what the world would be like 10 years down the road if they implemented these laws, and he said you wouldn't have the addiction and the death and the things that you have now because a generation has been swept into an early grave.
Exactly. So we're hoping to try to save the next generation from the same thing, and hopefully we can do that.
Well, you know, I hope that we can do it, too, and I hope that these... I know there are so many great organizations like yours across the United States, and I know that there are also so many parents that sit silently and peek out their window when a siren goes by wondering where their daughter or son is, or so many loved ones that, you know, wonder what happened to dad or mom when after they started taking their pain pills for their back procedure or accident or whatever it is. And it just seems so tragic that now the drugs, the war on drugs really should be the war on our medicine cabinet, not necessarily in the street. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, absolutely. That's one of the problems is that there's so many of these pills sitting there in medicine cabinets and people don't really know how to dispose of them properly. And, you know, you go to often after any kind of procedure, a doctor will give you the pills or give you a prescription for 30. And I just had surgery recently, and I had lectured my surgeon beforehand that I didn't want them. But when I left, I had him give me just the written prescription in case I needed it. But, you know, you get this advice, get ahead of the pain, start now,
right,
even though you're not in pain.
Right.
Well, I went home, I took ibuprofen, and it was a piece of cake. I didn't need any narcotic, but, you know, the doctors have been trained to think that they have to give that to you. And, of course, the pharmaceutical companies are making money every time one of those prescriptions is filled, and then it's just not even used.
Well, and a lot of your action with that is similar to what I do. You know, I recently had a little incident where I fell down a set of rocks on the beach and knocked myself out and had a good time. And of course, they want to prescribe everything in the world. But because of my you know, forced education about what these prescription drugs can lead to, I too chose not to and just took Tylenol instead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so many people, I think, you know, it's unfortunate that the water cooler talk, you know, somebody gets out of the, you know, has their teeth pulled or a procedure or something and says, gosh, they gave me 90 Vicodin and I'm not going to use them. And you know exactly what the people at the water cooler say.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take them.
Yeah, exactly.
And people share their medication with people thinking, oh, it's not that big a deal, but you could be sharing your medication with someone who's addicted. Because if they're just openly saying, I'll take them, they may have a problem that needs to be addressed if they're just wanting to take someone else's medication because it makes them feel good. They do have a problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well,
so tell us a little bit, you know, we're coming up on a couple minutes before we close. So the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation, I'm glad that you're the chair of the upcoming Fed Up rally. I think that that's, they obviously chose wisely, and I wouldn't expect anything less from Dr. Andrew Kolodny. He's an incredible man and offers so much to our community and so much education. So kind of revamp for us again, for our listeners, what they can do, where they can visit, and the dates and everything again.
Okay, this is a Fed Up. It's a rally for a federal response to the opioid epidemic. And we are just now going live with our webpage, which is at FEDUPRALLY, FedUpRally.eventbrite.com. And there'll be more and more information on that site, so please check back often. We don't have our t-shirts on there yet, but we may be adding that option. It's on October 1st, which is a Tuesday from noon to 2 p.m., and it's on Capitol Hill at Upper Senate Park in Washington, D.C., and we're calling for urgent action from our federal agencies because it is needed to prevent new cases of addiction and overdose death and to ensure effective treatment for millions who are already addicted. So if anybody has any questions, there's a place to contact me on that site, or just go to the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation and send a message, and I'm happy to get back to anyone who wants help. We need your support. It's expensive to put on a rally. We don't have the budget out there now, but we figure it's going to cost us about $25,000 with what we need to do, and so there's an option to donate money on that webpage. We appreciate your support in any way that we can get it, and we need you there. That's most
absolutely
important.
And I would say to people, if you can't make it, if it conflicts with a schedule, then that money that you would have spent on a hotel or a plane flight or whatever you were going to do, take half of that amount or something and make a donation to this so that we can have a presence there. So be there in spirit, but be there and help support this so that good people don't have to come out of pocket to help spread the word, to help save your loved ones.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and if there's anyone out there who's with an organization who would like to become a sponsor and get involved, please let me know. I mean, you can email me at judy@steverumlerhopefoundation.org, and we're happy to get any help we can, and we need to get the information out. So if you can go to the website, or to that web page, and get a copy of the flyer that's going to be on there momentarily, and circulate that to your organizations and to your friends, and it'll be great. We'll get the right crowd there, I know.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Judy. And by the way, Rumler is spelled R-U-M-M-L-E-R, correct?
Correct, yes.
So just in case you're looking for the Rumler Foundation with one M, double it up and you'll find it. So it's the Steve Rumler Hope Foundation. We're joined today by Judy Rumler, who has just been a force to be reckoned with since losing her son Steve on July 1st of 2011. Thank you so much for your time, Judy. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And again, I want to share these voices out there on Afflicted by Addiction. I'm your host, Bradley DeHaven. You've been listening to Afflicted by Addiction today. You can reach me at rxdrugaddict.com. I'm on Voice America's Variety Channel every Tuesday at noon. Please listen in. And once it airs, you can listen to it anytime you want in the archives. So we'll see you next Tuesday. And thank you, Judy, for joining us. And we'll be back next week.
Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Please join Bradley DeHaven for another Afflicted by Addiction program on the Voice America Variety Channel. We'll be back next Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time. We'll talk more then.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.